Okay, welcome once again to another Throttle Up Radio Show and Podcast, and I'm your host, Captain Kevin Smith, and I'm glad to be here along with my great audio engineer for another Throttle Up episode as we continue on our journey of, what is it, intellectual journey, right? So we're on a quest, on a journey to try to understand better what's going on with ourselves and what's going on with the world. And also to embrace the whole idea of critical thinking, and that's the whole point of Throttle Up Radio Show and Podcast. By the way, we are a podcast as well as a radio show. Radio show is on Red State Talk Radio. On the weekends, podcast is available everywhere that we know of. Just go to any podcast platform, type in Throttle Up Radio, and you got it. And it's right there. We're going to start off with a question from my great audio engineer. And we're going to dive right into it. We've got a lot of ground to cover. We've been off for, how long have we been off? Oh, about a week, right? We took a week off to, didn't really take a week off. We had to go to a conference. And I was speaking at this major conference in San Diego. So we didn't really take a week off, but kind of, but I would say not every now and then. I would say on a regular basis, we do speaking engagements as well. And so sometimes they do conflict, and we have to work around that and try to deal with that the best we can. But most of the time, we're able to do a weekend show and a weekly show here on Throttle Up. But last week was one of those exceptions that I'm sure will come up again. Okay, so let's dive right into it. My audio engineer is going to ask me this question, and we'll kick off the show with this question. Here she goes.
Hello, Kevin, and hello to your listening audience. We are so glad that they are here. Okay. This week's question, in referencing the conference that you went to last week, you talked about combat effectiveness recently at a wargaming conference. Can you explain to everyone what this means?
Yes, I will certainly do my best to explain what combat effectiveness is and why we need to understand it and how we can use it going forward. In order to do that, we're going to dive right into a couple of clips here to set the stage. Is that a good term? To set the stage for our discussion of this critical issue, actually. It is considered to be mission critical, and we need to deal with it in a meaningful way, not just disregard it or kick the can down the road or anything like that. We need to tackle this issue big time. Because if you if you look at the big picture, and we did this at this conference that we attended and that I spoke at last week, the picture is not as favorable as you might think it is. We have possibly lost touch with some of the more important aspects of combat effectiveness. It's kind of like we're relearning history. It's kind of like that, but I'm not sure exactly what's going on. But we have lost something, and we need to get back there very, very quickly in a matter of weeks and months, not years. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to kick this thing off, the show off, with a first thing is a brief clip, right? It was a couple of minutes. Yeah, this is going to set the stage. Then we're going to play something else after that, correct? We have a really great Q&A that we're gonna play as well, and then we'll use that to sort of like set the stage, and then after that we'll continue with our discussion. So let's go ahead and play this first clip of this comes from the Top Gun Maverick movie, right? Yeah. Okay. Here goes. It's really good, it's really well worth listening to, because Maverick is presenting a case for out-of-the-box thinking. This is really great. Here goes.
The F-18 NATOPS contains everything they want you to know about your aircraft. I'm assuming you know the book inside and out.
Damn right.
Got it.
So does your enemy.
And we're off.
But what the enemy doesn't know is your limits. I intend to find them, test them, push beyond. Today we'll start with what you only think you know. You show me what you're made of. The F-18 NATOPS.
Okay.
Contains everything.
All right, so that sets the stage, okay? In other words, Maverick is going to be discussing things that are not found in the book, not found in any book, as it turns out, although there may be something out there, I'm not really sure. I could point out a few books that it's possible to find it, but basically it's not in the book. It's just not book knowledge. It is something that you learn, which is outside the book and outside the box, and it's something that you do have to learn. And that's what makes Pete Mitchell, that's what makes Maverick such a great instructor, such a great fighter pilot, is he is willing to go outside the box. He is willing to go beyond what's in the book. And he talks about, okay, what is your limits? What are the limits? Do you know what your limits are? And that's pretty critical in terms of performing in this arena and understanding what is it about combat effectiveness that we really need to know about, need to understand. All right, so we're going to do another. This is a longer audio video clip. You can find this on YouTube. It's available. By the way, the title of this is Interview with Top Gun Pilot Captain Kevin Smith. That's me, of course. And this is a interview between me and a cinematographer. We played part of this last time. We're going to play the front part of it because it is really good, and it does address itself to the issues that we have before us. So let's go ahead and play this longer Q&A. It's an interview with a cinematographer by the name of Robert John Hatfield. He's asking me questions, and I am answering his questions, and we are actually filming this in a film studio. So this is a film studio production, very high quality, by the way. You find it anywhere on YouTube. Just type in that title and it comes right up. Okay, so let's go ahead and play this.
And maybe this would be an interesting to start with. How do you, what does it mean when you're a captain?
That's a senior officer rank. It's in the officer community, it's referred to as an 06, right? Which is six up, right? They go from one.
Okay.
01 up, all the way up to whatever a four-star admiral or general is. I forget what that is, but... But an 06 is a captain in the Navy or a colonel in the Army
Marines and Air Force. Coast Guard has the same ranks as the Navy.
Okay.
So Navy or Coast Guard. All right. So Captain is the rank.
Does that have anything to do with being a pilot, though, or no? Or is that something?
No, that's naval. All right. That goes way back in naval history. Captain of a ship. Right.
Okay.
And so when you're the captain of the ship, you're in charge of the ship. In my case, I was a squadron commander. It also is referred to as commanding officer. The British call it squadron leader. Nevertheless, you're in charge of the squadron. In this case, it was a fighter squadron, and we were deployed upon to be correct, it's you deploy in a man of war, but that's Navy speak, right?
Okay.
So we deployed in the USS Constellation, which was a man of war, okay?
What does that, help me out, what does that mean when you say man of war? Because I don't even know.
It's a capital combat ship.
Okay.
That's what it is, right? That leads your... That leads all of your forces.
Okay.
Your naval forces, Marines, whatever is afloat. That's the capital combat ship, usually a flagship as well. Okay.
Okay.
Right. It's all military speak. Nevertheless, it's important to have a little bit of understanding of that because that's the tip of the spear and that's what protects us as a country. Right. If you have a perimeter of protection, who is at the leading edge of that perimeter? Who is at the leading edge of that circle? The leading edge of that circle are the frontline warriors of any nation in our wonderful country that we have, the United States. We have some of the best people that I have ever met. They are the frontline warriors. And many of them became commanders of forward deployed combat units. And that's the ultimate military assignment with the highest level of responsibility that you can imagine. And so we all take that pretty seriously. To rise to that position and get selected for that position is in fact an honor. When I got to that position, I was very, very honored, and also I was humbled because somehow they thought that I was capable of taking on that level of responsibility. And we were forward deployed on an aircraft carrier. That is the ultimate assignment in my world. It's not the only great assignment, but for me, as a naval aviator and a Navy fighter pilot, that was the ultimate assignment for me. I tried to meet that challenge the best way that I could possibly do. I worked 18-hour days on a regular basis, we had a very, very long build-up period. We had a long deployment. The deployment that we had on, and this was very, very unusual, by the way, because we were in a very, very high stress time in this country. My deployment on the USS Constellation was 11 months long. Right?
You 11 months.
Yeah, 11 months. Right, and that is way beyond what humans can do. All right, but we had to do it. Okay, that was essential. We were at one time the only task force in the Pacific, and the Pacific was heating up big time, and we were the only task force in the Pacific, and the nation's eyes were on us. You probably don't remember this, but it was. And
you're talking about we're talking 1970s.
Yeah, this was post Vietnam.
Okay.
All right, and the Navy was challenged to rebuild their forces. right? It was a huge challenge. Simultaneously with that, the Navy was preparing and did, in fact, deploy the F-14 Tomcat, which was a next-generation fighter that took fighter technology way, way out into the future. And we were the second aircraft carrier to deploy with brand new, right out of the factory, F-14s. We were the first carrier to do that. And because of that, and because of the attention that was being paid to the air wing that I was in, was called Air Wing 9, they hand-selected the air wing commander. They brought in a very, very special person. He was, at that time, he was a Navy captain, Captain Tony Less. He has since went on to make vice admiral. And retired as a vice admiral. And he probably was the finest, most respected naval aviator currently on active duty. And they brought him in to lead the air wing because it was so important what we were doing. Right? And then I was in an F-8 unit, and our primary job was tactical reconnaissance because I was flying the reconnaissance version of the F-8 Crusader. And that version of the F-8 Crusader happened to be a very, very high-performance airplane. It was a little bit better than the fighter version because it had some features to it, had some improved aerodynamics to it, and it had a little bit cleaner and it was actually faster. Right? So it was the fastest airplane in terms of acceleration rates. It was the fastest airplane that we had in the air wing, and probably the fastest airplane ever in terms of its ability to accelerate.
Which one?
The F-8 Crusader.
The F-8 Crusader, right. This right here, this fastest right. Airplane.
Fastest airplane in terms of acceleration.
Okay.
Fastest accelerating airplane that we ever had.
Can you put that in some sort of term that
yeah,
I
Yeah, we could accelerate 50 knots a second.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Imagine that.
Yeah, that,
all the way out to Mach 1, all the way out to supersonic. We could accelerate 50 knots a second.
That means you could be supersonic in a few seconds.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we had this maneuver. We call it Ready 5 and, you know, launch maneuver off the carrier to intercept the bombers. The enemy bombers, and this is, we actually did this, by the way. This wasn't fake. These are real enemy bombers coming in. And we would launch off the carrier, and in 3 minutes, from carrier launch to intercept at supersonic at Mach 1, we could do that in 3 minutes.
Wow.
From the deck, 35,000 feet, Mach 1 in 3 minutes. Incredible.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, you know.
Well, it's
and
it's,
what I'm doing here, all right, in this wonderful studio with these wonderful people, what I'm doing here is I'm here to talk about my book, The Sonic Warrior, Chronicles of a Top Gun Pioneer. And there's a couple of important reasons why. And we talked about this before, right? When all is said and done, we are not just talking about the technology and the wonderful airplanes that we produce as a country, and they're wonderful, they're marvelous and stuff, but we're also talking about the human operator, the human side of this story. Sometimes maybe that gets underplayed. You know, perhaps even a little bit underrated, although I do think that some of the museums now are recognizing that and paying a little bit more attention to the human that actually could operate these airplanes successfully. These are very, very high-performance airplanes. Remember now that this is the analog era, okay? There was no GPS systems, there's no satellites, there was nothing. Zero, nothing, all right? There's a heading, a compass. We had a compass, that's about it, right? And we had to find a carrier with a compass. I don't know how you do that, but we had to do that. And so the human side of it is really a fascinating story, and so that's why we are, you know, producing this book, audio book. We just did the audio recording of this book, that'll be out soon, and this film. We're doing a film documentary, you and I are, and we're doing this trailer because we need to also have some of this stuff on video to explain what exactly are we trying to do. Is this just another book about aviation history? Not that any of them are bad. They're all great. I'm not criticizing anything in any attempt to add clarity to what has occurred. We are taking a little bit different tact here and a little bit different strategy, and that is we're focusing on the human side of this era. Now keep in mind, and this is really important to understand, Robert, keep in mind that we were faced with three mission-critical problems simultaneously, okay? Which were, how do you operate these very, very high-speed airplanes successfully? When we're talking about high speed, we're talking about well beyond the speed of sound, right? These airplanes could go well, well beyond the speed of sound in their top-end speeds. How do you operate these airplanes successfully when we've never been there before? We've never done that before. We've never gone to that level of speed where we were beyond the speed of sound. We used to think of the speed of sound as a sound barrier. That's right. as fast as airplanes could go because of various aerodynamic limitations. We overcame those limitations, and then we were able to quite easily go beyond the speed of sound. But that brought all kinds of issues to the surface and problems we had to solve. Keep in mind that this has never been done before. Humans had never operated in that area, in that dimension. And then we had to operate these airplanes, these very, very high-speed airplanes, high-performance airplanes. We had to figure out a way to actually successfully operate them in a carrier environment. How do you launch and recover high-performance airplanes in a carrier environment? And that is something that was never done before. Okay, so we had to figure that out. We did. That's amazing people that came to that problem and didn't shy away from this challenge. Amazing people. I have some of them listed, some of them in my book. I don't have all of them. I don't remember every single one at this stage in my life, but I did the best I could to acknowledge every one of those people that contributed to this success. So we have very, very high speeds, carrier environment, and then we also have, how do you conduct aerial combat? How do you fight? All right, how do you conduct aerial combat at these very high speeds and high G's? How do you do that? Right. And that was a whole new set of problems that we had to deal with and we had to overcome. And part of that story embraces the Top Gun initiative. And all of these people deserve an enormous amount of credit. And what was not clear from the various movies and treatments that have arisen because of the Top Gun, what was not clear was that all of this was grassroots, right? It didn't come from the top, it came from the bottom up, right? So this was a wonderful example of intellectual courage. The warriors got together and came up with a solution. So this was a warrior-generated solution. So when you think of Top Gun, you think of fighter pilots, you think of other people that have contributed to this initiative, and there's lots and lots of them. I've mentioned in my book as well. You know, all of these were people that were not going to take no for an answer, and were bound and determined to find a solution and to turn this into a weapon system that was extremely effective at the leading edge of the battle space, which was these high-performance fighter aircraft that could operate at enormous speeds, far beyond the speed of sound, and think about the energy that you have when you do that, as well as being able to think and solve problems when you're pulling 4, 5, and 6 Gs. How do you do that, all right? Now, humans have been able, we have figured that out. I was lucky, maybe, possibly right place at the right time. I don't actually know. But I figured that out as well and got some help along the way, of course. Some of the stuff had never been done before, right? So it was all brand new stuff. And interestingly, a lot of the what we thought were solutions didn't turn out to work, didn't work out very well, didn't turn out to be actual solutions. You know, they're kind of like feel-good stuff, but it actually didn't work, right? And so in a lot of cases, we had to go back to the drawing boards, and we had to say, okay, this doesn't work out really well. What are we going to do here? You know, we have this weapon system that we're trying to defeat, and we're trying to do it in this highly dynamic environment, you know, where the turning and burning and pulling Gs and all kinds of things, you know, and boy, we thought that this was the right way to go, and it didn't turn out to work out very well. And the other thing was really interesting, and it was something that we discovered when I was, at least I discovered this, when I was operating on the Constellation and we were doing this specialized Top Gun training exercises for the brand new F-14 communities. They wanted to develop a higher level of expertise in close-in air combat. That's what they wanted to do, right? And they asked me to help out. And I did, all right? And so one of the things that we did during these exercises is that we discovered something that was, at least from my perspective, was not known. That something happens above 450 knots, okay? I'm not exactly sure what it is, but above 450 knots, it's very, very hard to locate an airplane and to figure out its speed. Okay, it's almost, in fact, it's not possible to do that.
You're talking about in air combat.
Yeah,
being able to see the enemy.
And it's exactly the same as indeterminism. You know, in the quantum world, it's exactly the same, right? You can look it up, Heisenberg's indeterministic theorem, right? And his point was that the more you know about the velocity of an object, the less you know about its position and vice versa, right? And that's true in the high-speed supersonic world. That's true of the Sonic Warrior. The more you know of the position of these high-speed objects, the less you know of the velocity and vice versa. The more you understand the velocity, the less you know of its position. So it requires a lot of mental capacity to project into the future. So what we're dealing with is to be able to predict a future situation from a set of current events. And that is a strictly human exercise. Okay? We don't leave that up to machines. Machines
right.
don't do that. They don't know how to do it. Okay? And they don't have the capacity or the wherewithal humans do. And actually, humans can do it pretty well. It's amazing. What do they bring to the table? I don't have all the answers. You know, there's something going on. You know, in it.
Okay, so we we're not going to complete this this audio video this week. We may run the whole thing again in its total. Content sometime in the future shows. I kind of think we're going to do that. This is a really good Q&A, and of course it's on YouTube, so you can find it. You can play it. It's really quite good. Okay, so let me get back to the question. My great audio engineer asked me, what is it about combat effectiveness that we should understand and know about? All right, so what is that? So I am presenting this, I guess you could say I'm presenting this case for combat effectiveness at this conference that we attended in San Diego last week. How do you quantify combat effectiveness? That's one of the things that we were addressing. We were trying to understand better. How should we quantify it? How should we understand it from an analytical standpoint? And what's the analytical process? Is it just kind of like a knee-jerk reaction? Is it some kind of an ad hoc thing? Now, I'm not saying that you don't just you try to dive into some kind of a esoteric analytical process. You can use your intuition. You can use your insight. I like to do that. Right. I like to look at something. Okay, from a intuitive standpoint, what is being revealed, or what should I look at among all the possible things that I could look at? What should I look at in terms of combat effectiveness and so forth and so on? Now, what I came up with were four things that contribute to combat effectiveness. Now, these are four high-level things. This is not down into the details. We don't do that here. That's not what we're all about. If you like that, go some other place, please, with our greatest respect. But we are always at the high level of examination, analysis. Conceptualization is the key to our success here. As well as other people are using this also. Higher order reasoning and conceptualization, by the way, is pretty much the same. There are probably some slight differences between the two, but for our purposes here, higher order reasoning and conceptualization are in fact the same thing. There are four things that contribute to combat effectiveness, and we have listed them. We talked about them at this conference, and we're going to be talking about them for the foreseeable future. Number one is velocity. Now, we're talking, keep in mind, this is not just about aerial combat, because John Boyd, in his maneuver warfare theory, points out the necessity for velocity, for motion. Okay, so the first thing is velocity. The second thing is energy. Now, they are, in fact, and I will admit this right up front, velocity and energy are closely related. They're not exactly the same thing. So we have to sort of like, and I have decided to break them apart. Others may not want to do that, but that's okay. All right, we are all free to do any kind of innovation that seems to be appropriate. Velocity is first, okay? Velocity in terms of, and we use different terminology here, and because we're dealing with high velocity, right? Once we move from low velocity to high velocity, we move into the realm of the Mach number. We don't use airspeed anymore. Okay, we really don't. All right, we use Mach number. Mach number becomes effective, or let me put it this way: Mach number becomes of interest when you are in the vicinity of 0.8 Mach or greater. Okay, 0.8. What is that? That is 0.8 times the speed of sound. That's what 0.8 Mach is. 1.0 is the speed of sound. So Mach 1.0. Mach 1.5 is 1.5 times the speed of sound. And so we're going to be using Mach number here in velocity, not speed, because that's a little bit hard to do. And there's a lot of errors in that, and of course then you have to define what speed you're talking about. You're talking about true airspeed, you're talking about ground speed, and on and on and on, and it becomes too complicated, and so we just refer to Mach number. Okay, what is your Mach number? How close are you with respect to the speed of sound? Speed of sound is kind of like the anchor point. Okay, so are you above or below that anchor point? The other one is energy. Energy is velocity, but it's more than that. It certainly includes kinetic energy, which is 1/2 mv². It's also potential energy, and it's also propulsion energy. Sometimes that is called chemical energy. I like to use propulsion energy because we are dealing with a heat engine. And so we're using propulsion or propulsive power. Is that a word? Maybe I invented a new word. Did I invent? My audio engineer is saying I may have invented a new word here. Okay, so good. So we invented a new word as well, propulsive. The other two elements of combat effectiveness is agility. Not giving a lot of attention, particularly recently. We're more interested in the high-tech realm of these air combat systems. That includes, not limited to, but includes things like GPS navigation. It includes collaborative combat drones. It includes all kinds of very high-tech systems. It includes autonomous systems, not unmanned autonomous systems, and the list goes on and on and on and on. Do these things actually work in the real world? That's an open question. Has not been determined yet, okay? The question is still out there. Nobody has an answer. I think you'll find some want to believe that it can be done and that it may be done quickly. Others believe that it can't be done in the near term. And then there's another group of people who think that it can never be done. Right? I kind of think that the people that represent the Mavericks of the world, kind of think those people don't actually think it could ever be done. The Mavericks of the world do not think that the human can be replaced. I think if you read between the lines when you are listening to or watching the Top Gun Maverick movie, you can see what is the mindset of Maverick. What is the mindset of Pete Maverick Mitchell? What's his mindset? His mindset is that the human operator, the human in the cockpit, the fighter pilot, he's a preeminent weapon system. It doesn't matter what he's flying. But success or failure is determined by what is the mental capabilities of the fighter pilot. And in history, basically, proves that point. It's not something that was invented for the Top Gun Maverick movie. History, time and time again, proves that point. That it's a human in the cockpit that makes a difference. All right, so agility, we talked about that. Agility, this is the physical and mental agility. You have to be mentally agile. What does that mean? Well, okay, so you remember the first thing that we played, which is, you know, the NATOPS, all right? The procedure manual. The procedure manual is rigid. What Maverick was trying to do, the Maverick was trying to explain to his class that, okay, that as far as this manual takes you, that's fair enough, but that it's not far enough. Okay, you need to go beyond what is in the manual. Okay, what does that mean? It means that you must be mentally agile. It means go beyond what is written down, because it probably is not everything that you need to do. It's also hard to update it. It's always behind the curve. What's the leading edge stuff? Leading edge stuff is agile thinking. Okay, that's the leading edge stuff. How do you do that? Well, you develop that capability. Okay, that's what you do. Right? You're not rigid. You don't exist in a rigid framework that is defined by written down procedures, for one thing, and tactical doctrine that does not allow for one to move around mentally. John Boyd, Colonel John Boyd, one of our greatest thinkers, came up with maneuver warfare theory. And basically, it's the agility on the battlefield, okay, to be agile. And in order to be physically agile, you also have to be mentally agile. So agility is key. One of the things that occurs in my world, which is the airborne battle space, the world of the fighter pilot, when I enter the airborne battle space, okay, I employ an entry protocol. Now, I pointed this out in my talk last week in San Diego. What is the entry protocol? Well, it's kind of like a new idea, basically. Now, we talked about this before on this show, but it is a new idea, and I think it's extremely important. I think it's mission critical that we have in mind an entry protocol given what we know about the airborne battle space. Now, keep this in mind, that we may not know everything about the airborne battle space, but understand that, sure, we will not know everything, but we'll know a certain amount of things. And let's prepare ourselves mentally for that. Okay, so preparation, planning. Before we enter the airborne battle space, we have a pretty good idea of what our entry protocol is. The first and foremost, that we have to enter the airborne battle space with what is called a positive delta Mach. What exactly is that? Do you know what it is? I'm asking my audio engineer. Do you know what a positive delta Mach is? I should probably explain that. All right, so here goes. All right, this is mission critical. What is this? And again, I'm using a term that comes out of a document that was written by Colonel John Boyd, the great John Boyd, okay? You enter the airborne battle space with a positive delta Mach. What does that mean? It means that the Mach number that you have acquired or achieved is greater than positive delta, greater than the enemy's Mach number. Okay? Now, is there any upper limit? Well, there is a practical upper limit because you can only go so fast. But there ought to be something that you want to excuse me, want to achieve in as you enter the airborne battle space. You want to have a speed in terms of Mach number. You want to have a speed that is greater than the enemy's speed. Okay. And the last thing is lethality, right? What does that mean? That means to be able to achieve a weapons firing solution. All right, to be inside the weapons firing envelope, not outside the envelope. To be inside the weapons firing envelope. That's particularly critical. You got to see that in some form or fashion in the Top Gun Maverick movie. Got to see what the weapons firing envelope looks like. The pipper on the target and the pipper lighting up and changing colors and making noises and all that kind of stuff. Yes, but it did not give you an idea of what the envelope is. In other words, what are the boundaries? The envelope is the boundaries that exist with respect to the ability to achieve a firing solution. Okay, that's lethality. All right, so now, velocity and energy are related, but they're not the same thing. Agility and lethality are related, too. All right, you notice that, but they're not the same thing. So we can look at that whatever is going on in terms of velocity and energy, that's got to have some kind of relationship between themselves, and it also has to have a relationship with the other two items, which is agility and the lethality. So agility and lethality work together, but they're also related. All right, so one group is related to another. So here we have four things. Two things are related to each other, and then the whole group is related to one another, and that relationship can be expressed mathematically. And we showed how to do that at this conference. And we'll probably put up a video sometime in the near future to show how that mathematical formula works out. Okay. Combat effectiveness in terms of the tip of the spear. All right, so when we're at the leading edge of the air combat battle space, if we're at the leading edge of it, leading edge of the conflict, we are at the tip of the spear, and we are looking for things. And the first order of business is, okay, so what do you do? Well, the key here is to identify or understand what exactly is mission critical. Okay, that's what you do. The first order of business here is what is mission critical, and can we stack it up on a importance scale, if you will, or an importance ladder? What's the top rung of the ladder here? The top rung of the ladder is going to be to, when you enter into the airborne battle space, you have to have the advantage. You have to have an advantageous position. Okay, with respect to all four elements. Okay, you have to achieve and secure and maintain the advantage. That's what must be done. Okay. If you cannot do that, you are likely not going to win the conflict. you are going to, it's either going to be a draw or you're going to lose the conflict. Okay, so, and the other thing is this, right? And we started off this show by understanding things like, okay, Maverick wanted to know what are your limitations. I'm getting a two-minute warning from my audio engineer. Maverick wanted to know, what are your limitations, right? What exactly is that? Well, that's the human side of the equation. That's called human factors, okay? What are the limitations of the human operator? In this case, what are the limitations of the fighter pilot in the cockpit of this fighter machine? What are the limitations or the human limitations? Do you know what your limitations are? So, for example, can you be pulling 6, 7, or 8 G's and still think about maintaining the advantage because you have converted your energy in a way that improves your position with respect to the enemy? In other words, the enemy's energy conversion, you convert energy to position and back again. The enemy's ability to convert energy into a lethal position is less effective than your ability, and so that gets back to combat effectiveness. All right, so how effective are you as a combat machine? This is a human machine that engages in combat. How effective are you, or how effective is this combat machine, this human machine entity, is ultimately should be given a combat effectiveness rating. And we'll talk more about this next week. How much time do we have left?
20 seconds.
My great audio engineer says we have 20 seconds left. It's is it ending? Okay. All right. That's another Throttle Up Radio Show and Podcast. Thank you for listening, and we will see you all next week.